All right. Welcome to Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. My name is Derek Burrows.
I'm Mike Jackson. Glad to be here. Glad to be on KPFT Houston. Yeah. Hope y'all are having a great afternoon, evening, whatever time you're in.
Whenever you're watching, we appreciate it. Yeah, we've been, we're off last week. It's been busy, but we're back again. And we still haven't had the whole crew here. This week, we're missing Johnny. I think maybe the week before that, Micah was gone. The week before that, Johnny was gone. But either way, we're happy to be back, guys. We've got lots of information to cover. Of course, every week on Freethinker Radio, we try to bring you guys underground music, uncensored news from Houston and around the world. Whether you live in Houston or not, the things that we cover, we think they're relevant to everyone everywhere else because there's a lot of struggles happening. We're also going to get into in the second half what's going on in Canada with these quarantine centers. We're going to talk about what's happening in Myanmar, there's protests and internet shutdowns. And I saw some stuff about India farmer protests. And then I know we got even, you know, crazy things happen in Denmark, so we're going to get to all the international. We could go all around the world today,
but we're going to play some music.
Yeah, we're going to play music for sure today. And I know we got some events that you wanted to share, Michael. You want
to
start there?
Yeah, as far as in Houston here next Saturday, Ganesha is going to be a free show at the at Red Dwarf. I thought that was pretty interesting, and kicks off I guess around 7:45. And so if you know where Red Dwarf is, you can get into it. You can find that on Facebook. Get all into that.
What side of Houston is that in?
Downtown.
Cool. I don't think I've ever been to Red Dwarf.
Yeah, but it's good. And I guess they're trying to do what they can. You know, if you wear a mask, if that's your thing, then they'll be available for you. I guess you don't even have to bring your own. You could come in whatever they assign you as. You know, everyone's going to look like a medical person.
Yeah, and while we're mentioning another event, I definitely want to mention the House of J event. As I said, Johnny's not here this week. He's out, but we're wishing him well and hope to have him back soon. But the House of J, which is where Johnny lives and is a local community space social club here in Houston, you can find them on Facebook at House of J. If you just search, you'll pull them up. But they have a market that they're hosting this Sunday, and they recently put out a little trailer for their community spot and kind of the event, the vibe and the kind of community they're trying to build. And we've got a lot of plans as far as community garden days and things like that. But this Sunday from 12 to 4 p.m., I think, they're having the House of J monthly marketplace. And they describe it as community supporting each other through trading, buying, selling, and networking services. It is free for anybody to come set up a table. If you've got, services to offer or products to sell or cards to hand out or just maybe information, you can set up a table. And maybe if you're just looking to trade some things or just interested in checking it all out, you are welcome to do that. It says food and drinks, things like that. They also say, do you cut hair? Do you fix phones? Teach karate? Come set up shop and do your thing. And they're encouraging the use of cash or silver or cryptocurrency. And I think there's going to be a DJ as well playing some music. So could be pretty cool. 12 to 4 p.m. on the east end of downtown Houston at House of J. These are the kind of things I always want to support because, you know, Micah, during COVID insanity, we've seen that, Amazon getting richer, Bezos getting richer, all those kinds of people, more and more people relying on those systems to do everything. Because, we got to stay home. Everything's,
the bigs are getting bigger.
The bigs are getting bigger. The Walmarts are getting bigger and all that. So when you have the opportunity to support somebody on the local level, I think it's really important, especially something like that where it's like a community actually coming together and everybody supporting each other in whatever way they can,
I think you're entirely right. You think about it, you also, even when things are good, your buying power is that much closer to whatever you want to call it, your heart, your philosophy, your mind, your principles, whatever you want to say it, your culture, so you're enculturating what you believe in with your consumer dollar. Why not? Oh, and I do want to mention, we were talking about Ganesha being live and free, Houston, awesome rock band. It's Red Dwarf. We were talking about that. I looked it up. It's 1011 McGowan. And it's just like when you go under the Gulf Freeway heading south downtown on Fannin, right at McGowan. So Fannin and McGowan, boom, free concert. Sounds pretty good. It sounds like a way to get out. And I do notice that that's Friday, and the Epicurean Market in the Heights, 1300 block, is the next morning.
I definitely miss being in Houston. I'm here in Houston right now at this moment, but I'm only just visiting. Many of our regular listeners know that I've been living in Mexico, but I'm here in Houston this week, and it's awesome. I'm happy to be here. And I definitely miss the opportunity. I was just looking up all the events going on in Houston, even with COVID stuff happening, markets around, and it's cool. I definitely appreciate that about Houston. And one other thing I almost forgot, there's actually, so in addition to everything we just mentioned, markets, the Epicurean Market, House of J Market, the show at Red Dwarf, I'm kind of organizing a protest rally info jam Saturday afternoon from 12 to 3 at the Galleria area, West Diamond and Post Oak. It's just another rally for health, freedom, and choice for people who kind of want to speak up about those issues, freedom of choice, freedom of speech, bodily autonomy, individual liberty, all those good things, medical freedom.
You know, you say, you know, it's justice, but this is kind of an important way. And I don't want to be too dismissive. So that was not like a lot of like complex words. And I know we got to go fast because we only have so much time and we got to cover how crazy the authoritarian state across the globe is. But maybe just take a moment for each of those three things you rattled off, for lack of a better term, a moment ago, just to reach out and let people know what this means.
Health freedom. So I mean,
because I heard about it on NPR. I heard about these health freedom people from this doctor. Or really, they interviewed this doctor. You might have heard of him, and he was talking all about these health freedom people. I'm not joking, and he didn't sound that positive. So I'd like to take a moment to.
Sure. I mean, I think it's worth exploring. So again, the rally is called Houston Rally for Health, Liberty, and Choice. It's kind of a continuation of a rally that some of us were involved in back in December. And it's just calling for freedom of choice, freedom of speech, bodily autonomy. What does that mean exactly? Freedom of choice, specifically in this regard, freedom to choose how you want to take care of your body, you know, as far as health issues. And when it comes to COVID, obviously we're dealing with COVID right now, whether or not you want to vaccinate, the freedom to choose if you want to vaccinate yourself or your children, which for the moment is still a choice people have, but there are increasing pressures. As you said, there's people out there talking about people who talk of about health freedom or medical freedom, which is again just related to the freedom to choose how you choose to medicate or not medicate yourself in various ways. There are people who see that as a threat, you know, and of course we have this label anti-vaxxers. When I was here in December, we did the last one, we made the Chronicle and they called me a non-vaxxer. I don't know if I've ever used that word, but you know, it's kind of a new spin on the, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, because I told them I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I just want to make it clear. I just believe in freedom. So then they call me a non-vaxxer. But either way, it's, you know, so it's about that. And if anybody's interested, those who do use Facebook, Houston Rally for Health, Liberty, and Choice. When it comes to bodily autonomy, I think it's just kind of a continuation of the point I was just making there. And then I think a kind of tangential issue here is the freedom.
But it could apply to a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the concept.
From women's rights, you know, to the drug war.
And for me, it's just about applying it consistently, right? I think that I believe in bodily autonomy across the board with different issues. The same thing, like if you want to put cannabis in your body, I don't think you should be locked up for doing that. If you want to, you know, do different thing, whatever. It's like, I believe in that and I try to apply it consistently. And I know it can be a complex issue, but I also want to add that one of the other things that we put in here is standing up for free speech. And then the other important one, standing up for small businesses that are being affected by the lockdowns and things like that. And so I do know, we've talked about this earlier. We know local business owners here in Houston. I know local businesses in Mexico that are being affected by lockdowns and fears of curfews. And even just the fear that if they don't cooperate, some health department agent might come in and shut them down and then they're going to, you know, lose their license or whatever. So there's a lot of fear keeping people in line. But I also think it's important to highlight that it's a free speech issue as well, because these topics are being increasingly like removed from the internet and this idea. And with the Biden administration really kind of wholeheartedly embracing the vaccine push even more than the Trump administration, it seems kind of, you know.
Do you say Biden's more authoritarian on one issue at least?
Well, you know, as we're going to get into in today's episode, when we get to the national news, we're going to start with some Houston news here in just a moment. But we're going to see that, guys, there's a renewed push for domestic push to focus on domestic extremism, domestic terrorism. And that word, that label, I think is very dangerous. Unfortunately, I see people on the left using it for their quote unquote political enemies on the right and vice versa. And I think that's dangerous. We'll talk about that more, because
they're
even saying people who question vaccines or who believe that, hey, you own your own body are extremists now, you know. And there was even former CIA director John Brennan was on CNBC or one of the shows recently, and he said we need to identify every white supremacist, every authoritarian, even libertarians, you know. So
identify everyone.
It's pretty dangerous stuff here, but let's go ahead and
dive
in.
Get a label for them and pin them on the wall.
I'm gonna go ahead and pull up our Houston news. We want to remind everybody that this show is live every week on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. The website for KPFT is kpft.org. if you decide you want to support and the name of Freethinker Radio to keep KPFT alive on Houston. It's Houston's only remaining commercial-free, corporate-free, listener-supported radio. You know, so that's it's something to be proud of and thankful for. And if you do live in Houston, or whether you live in Houston or not, it's something to support. So visit kpft.org, and you can support our show as well as plenty of other programs like
us. I'd like to say something in that vein real quick. And I'd like to appeal to anybody that's never donated to KPFT. The fund drives has been getting shorter because people have been contributing. The station's been managing money, and we're glad to have the listenership. So if you've never contributed before and something you hear in this show affects you tonight, today, then please, you know, call in and make that first-time pledge to keep this sort of voice on the radio. You know, in a world where the internet's more and more censored, you got gun rights groups being taken off, however you feel about that issue. You've got health freedom people being taken off. You've got just general people being taken off. I mean, The Last Vagabond, so many other people. And we see this just occurring more and more, that now it's to where free speech, which is one of the reasons KPFT's always existed, is actually more flourishing on FM radio as opposed to the internet. So now more than ever, KPFT is both deserving and needs your money. So show that love gift if you feel moved tonight, because we're really looking for the first-time donors to donate in the name of Freethinker Radio or whichever show you enjoy on here. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to start with an important story that it's important to Houstonians, or it should be important to Houstonians, but also it should be important for people all over the world, because police violence is a problem. No matter if you think the police are the greatest thing since sliced bread or whatever, there are clearly problems with the way police have been trained, especially in the United States. You know, I don't know if people who are in the U.S. and don't have much kind of connection outside realize that most countries don't consider it to be a normal thing to just have regular police killings and shootings and things like that. There's a real prominent case right now, maybe we can touch on later, that's going on in Ohio, where another person was shot and killed by an officer. The officer claimed, "Oh, I thought he had a gun. It was a cell phone." And now they have officers being indicted up there in Ohio. So it's happening, right? And we're talking about something that happened in 2019, January 2019. And here we are, February 2021. And up to now, 12 officers in Houston have been charged in connection with the what is sometimes called the Tuttle Raid for Dennis Tuttle, the man who was killed, and his wife, Regina Nicholas, or the Harding Street Raid. But it happened January 2019 in Houston. And as I said, six more officers recently indicted from Harris County DA, Kim Ogg. And the charges include murder, tampering with government records, engaging in organized criminal activity. And I mean, I don't want to rehash too much of what we've already talked about over the last 2 years now. I can't believe it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
But essentially, the cops lied. They claimed that this veteran, Dennis Tuttle, and his wife were drug dealers. They were criminals, and they needed to go into their house because there was going to be drugs and weapons, and that there was this, you know, heroic shootout with HPD where they, you know, saved the day and whatever. And it all ended up being based on false reports, false warrants, you know, lies based on informants that didn't even exist. And now more than 12, you know, up to 12 officers have been charged. And I don't know that we even have the full story. Of course, the hope is that it's a good sign. Of course, I want to take a moment to say it's a good sign.
Thousands of cases that lead officer Goins has been involved in have been investigated, are being investigated. Numerous ones, people have been found basically to be in jail erroneously based on similar evidence where he himself was a lone witness, things like that.
So you know, there is good coming out. And that's what I was going to say is like you pointed out, the case is being reviewed, 12 officers being charged. Charged isn't, of course, you know, found guilty yet.
That's how profoundly, deeply flawed it was. And if it didn't come to light like it did, they might not have gotten this deep into the roots of the problem.
And those people would still be known as drug dealers. No matter what's going to happen, they're dead, right? And that's just the fact of the matter. Let's be real about it. And I've said this before, I think it was...
And their dog, and I never hear about him being charged for that.
The dog was killed, of course, as well. And I went to one of the press conferences, I think it was probably more than a year ago now at this point, but I was able to meet the brother of Regina Nicholas, and his family's from Louisiana, and he was kind of explaining that the mom, her basically her kind of last wish, she's 85 years old now, is that she can get her daughter's name cleared because, you know, the cops ran their name through the mud and called them drug dealers and called them dangerous and all these sorts of things. And they've never apologized to the family. They've never recanted, you know, backed off. But in the initial stages, we played sometimes we play a song from local band Fusca, and they have a clip there from Joe Grimaldi, the president of the police union, saying, like, anybody out there on social media talking bad about cops, we got your number, we're coming for you, or whatever, you know. So they were very reactive, very much trying to keep control of the narrative, not like, hey, maybe we messed up, maybe we screwed up. And so I don't trust HPD on this one. I'm glad there's 12 indictments so far and 12 charges.
You hear that they also found that in this process, they discovered other crimes, such as that they also, just a general simple one, were involved in a long-term scheme of stealing overtime from the city. Gee whiz. You know?
So they're stealing all kinds of taxpayer money. They're killing people. I mean, these are literally just like the dirty cops that they make movies about. You know, here in the city of Houston. I want to add to this, the families of Virginia Nicholas and Dennis Tuttle are suing the Houston police. This came out in late January. The families of the couple killed in the drug raid have filed new lawsuits that the deaths of their loved ones were the tragic results of a narcotics unit that for years was rife with corruption and no accountability, and now has many of its members under indictment. So they're basically saying, like, look, the evidence proved this unit was just some, you know, gangsters, basically. These are just criminal cops out there getting away with all kinds of stuff. Who knows what else they were involved in?
I do want to point out one thing about that whole raid, that also another person was charged, that person that the neighbor that falsely called was charged with.
The neighbor lied about, you know, was played a, some role. And again, I don't think we know the full story, but was lying about what had happened and whether or not they were using drugs or selling drugs. It also says here in this report from the Associated Press, an audit made public in July of the narcotics unit found that officers made hundreds of errors in cases, they lacked supervision, and overpaid informants for the seizure of minuscule amounts of drugs. So they were just making their work look, you know, the better than it was, and trying to, and also apparently robbing people and doing shady things.
You know, one other thing about the narrative to think about is, and it's a point we've said on here a few times, but I want to lead it to another point. In 100% of his no-knock raid cases, Goins reported illegal weapons being present in the house. In 0% of those raids did he recover illegal weapons. In the narrative, when the news comes on, they say another drug-dealing couple was killed with their vicious attack dog, that is reported that illegal weapons were in the house too. See, it's another one of those, we got to stop these weapons. We got to stop these drug dealers.
Yeah, it's more of the same. It's just sad. But again, we'll stay on the story. It's been 2 years now that we've been reporting on this here at Freethinker Radio. And as Michael was saying, if there hadn't been, you know, there were, we've interviewed High from the group Justice for the Tuttle, Are We the People, the Justice for the Tuttle movement. I participated in some of those protests, and it did get some news coverage, not enough, unfortunately. But even with the pressure that was applied, we're finding out more and more about this. And, you know, I don't endorse everything she's done, but I will say that the DA's office is at least pursuing this to this point that we're at. And hopefully we can get some kind of justice for the family, since we can't get their lives back, of course. But yeah, we got a couple other.
Some people would say the DA has no choice but be responsive to that. And I'd say either way, that's still good. But I think we've lived in for decades where we didn't have strong DAs that would be responsive to it, you know? And so I think we've got to be glad that the conversation is even being had and people are digging into it, because obviously it's affected a lot more people than just the murdered Tuttles.
Yeah, absolutely. We're here on Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston. We're going to continue our look at some local news this week here in Houston. The cop news is just, I guess,
it's
the
really,
focus.
It's really happening in Houston, I guess. You know, and we talked, you were talking about the family suing, and what point we keep making here is, who paid for the officers there, who paid for the stolen overtime, who paid for the bullets that killed the Tuttles? Who's going to pay when the lawsuit gives justice to the relatives of the Tuttles?
The taxpayers, unfortunately. You
know? With that being said, in lawsuit, woman trampled by HPD police force accuses the department of negligence. And so this was a person that was seen in a video being trampled by a Houston Police Department horse during a George Floyd protest. So she filed her lawsuit January 15th. And is accusing the department of negligence. So another time where, you know, a person, a bystander with a camera, caught that. She's going after a jury trial, seeking compensatory, general, and special damages. So So there's that one. But y'all might remember.
So this is somebody being trampled at a protest by the horse cops. We've seen this happen before.
Yes. And there was another individual. So we got basically at least three lawsuits against the Houston police for different things. This one is because they shot at him and he didn't do no crime. So he's suing them. He's the, you know. But yeah, we actually talked about this story as well as the Tuttles back, you know, when we heard about it last year. This was an individual who approached some, I guess they were undercover, unmarked truck in a Walgreens parking lot on MLK to offer mobile detailing services, something he does regularly with patrons. So he's out there being an entrepreneur, trying to feed himself, doing things.
Trying to hustle.
Yeah, basically getting his hustle on. And they basically started shooting him when he came over to offer him stuff. When he like basically,
so he was trying to wash windows. Is what you're saying? Like,
well, he went and put his right hand to in the backpack up to his elbow, raised the backpack in the air. They thought he had a gun, like you know what they say always, and believed that they were going to be shot. They discharged their weapon and shot him multiple times.
So he didn't die, obviously, right?
No, he still has two bullets in his body, though. Jesus. And he suffers from psychological trauma.
The trauma of being shot by cops.
Shot. And how much do you think he's going to be willing to go up to people and ask them if they need their car detailed, window washed, etc.? But nonetheless, he will be suing as well. So the suit stack piling up, death body piling up. Things are pretty serious.
So that's interesting, though. I mean, like you said, three lawsuits, right? One, multiple lawsuits now coming from the families of two people who were in Houston in 2019, then lawsuit for being trampled by cop wars, lawsuit for being shot by cops.
Yeah.
That's what's going on in some local lawsuits here in Houston. I mean,
yeah, and I imagine things like this are going on in many big cities.
Well, and like I said, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. I think I want to at least acknowledge his name. I think it was Andre Smith, Ohio. I'm pulling it up right now. Again, guys, I'm talking about another shooting. Let me see if I can pull up cop shooting. I'm sure one of the listeners is shouting the name at me right now. Cop shooting in Ohio. And it's just, you know, it's an unfortunate regular thing.
Someone said, wow, this is nonstop taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, so, okay, Andre Hill, excuse me. Uphill battle to convict a cop who shot Andre Hill. But the fired Ohio police officer is now under arrest on murder charge in the shooting of Andre Hill, who was a black man. Shot in Ohio. So yeah, I mean, that's like you said, it is an issue that's affecting people here in Houston. It's affecting people all around the U.S. I don't want to say all around the world, because like I said earlier, it's not necessarily a normal thing everywhere. It is kind of accepted in the U.S.
We shoot downs and beat downs—they're not normal.
They're not. They shouldn't be normal.
This isn't for shoot down.
But I do want to say though that, you know, they probably will get worse if there's not pushback. We're going to start to shift now here into some of the national news and some of the things that we're seeing, which, I mean, honestly, Micah, it's like everything we've been talking about for years now kind of being a little bit more front and center, not like, oh yeah, they're thinking about this program in the future. We're dealing with some crazy stuff. I'm going to start with the wall topic. About this during the Trump, you know, era, and encouraging some of Trump's supporters who appreciated his call for, like, hey, we're going to stop illegal immigration by building a wall, right? People who thought that was a good idea, and encouraging them to kind of take a look at it. Like, if you might think that that's a good idea and that's fine, but when you start to look at the actual bills that were being put forth by Trump and the talks of what they were doing, even then they were floating the idea of this biometric wall or digital wall or virtual wall. They're like, oh, maybe some of it will be physical, because he didn't complete a full-on physical wall. He completed some sections. But even though they didn't complete a physical wall, the Trump administration increased the amount of facial recognition cameras up and down the south and north border, the installation of more license plate reader cameras that can spot cars and track them and create lists and stuff. They've bragged about having cameras that can see the person sitting in the back seat of the car more than a mile away from the border, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And now here we are, where Biden's like, hey, we're going to reverse a lot of this Trump era stuff, get rid of that physical wall. But he's embracing this idea of a smart wall. And The Nation magazine, which is more of a progressive left-leaning outlet,
smart to something.
It's definitely not good. But the kind of left-leaning outlet, but progressive, you know, they consider themselves progressive, whatever you think about that term. I appreciate them that they hold leftists accountable, at least I'll say, you know. I don't always agree on everything, but in this case, they put out a pretty good report and this was kind of expanded on by the Free Thought Project, if anybody wants to find this. The article is titled, Biden Takes Trump's Wall to the Next Level. New smart wall will spy on Americans hundreds of miles inland. And this is just a continuation of that expansion of that quote-unquote constitution-free zone that we've seen expanded in the post-9/11 era. And here we are 20 years after 9/11, and we're seeing it just go to the next level. But the nation was examining the full text of an immigration legislative proposal that Biden sent to Congress, and a fact sheet distributed to reporters contains a section called Supplement Existing Border Resources with Technology and Infrastructure, which calls for additional funding to, quote, enhance the ability to process asylum seekers and manage and secure the southern border between ports, that focuses on flexible solutions and technologies that can expand. So it's kind of government lingo and stuff, but it's talking about aerial drones, infrared cameras, motion sensors, radar, facial recognition, artificial intelligence, and it can be very dangerous. This is just, I'll read one paragraph from The Nation. It says, unlike a border wall, an advanced virtual border doesn't just exist along the demarcation dividing countries. It exists hundreds of miles inland along the constitution-free zone of enhanced border patrol authority. It's in the private property and along domestic roadways. It's at airports, where the government is ready to roll out facial recognition systems with no age limit that includes travelers on domestic flights that never cross a border. I think this is really important for people to see. And again, just the point I want to make is that it's something that Trump helped set into place, or at least expanded after Obama and Bush, you know, and just the continuation. And now here is Biden. Hey, we're going to reverse all those physical walls Trump's talking about, but we're going to roll forward with the AI facial recognition smart wall, virtual wall, biometric wall.
Like you said beforehand, why the things they weren't arguing about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff that they're in agreement on is tyranny enough, is authoritarian enough. I mean, yeah, let's just argue over which flavor.
Which flavor of the beating do you want?
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of part of the whole thing, Micah, like as far as like this, we're shifting for a couple of stories into the domestic extremism talk. And I think it's really important. I titled today's episode, Are You a Domestic Extremist? Because that list is growing. I mean, I even have friends, thankfully, some who are kind of more on the left, who are like, hey, you know what? This idea of expanding the definition of terrorism, extremism is not good for anybody.
They're recognizing that. It's not good for ideas. It's not good. Look, every time in the history, how much horrible stuff has happened in this name of, you know, the public safety, just being abused. So once you start pointing a finger at citizens, and you probably ought to be very careful, especially with the powers that they have now.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's what I'm saying here. So after the post-Capitol riot, and I'm talking about how it's like the worst thing ever in the world, they're using that, and whatever you think about the Capitol and what happened on January 6th, it's clearly being used as a way. It's like, well, we need to go after people and anybody who said this thing or this wrong thing. It's getting dangerous to the point where this first article I want to talk about, and this is extremely dangerous, Micah. This is like, if they're talking about building walls to survey everybody and keep, you know, I'd say keep people in. And then you got outlets, mainstream outlets like the New York Times, writing editorial pieces calling for Biden to appoint, quote, reality czars to fight misinformation. This sounds a lot like the Ministry of Truth from 1984. In an article titled How the Biden Administration Can Help Solve Our Reality Crisis, the New York Times' Kevin Roos cites, quote, experts who are calling on...
Tell us what to think.
These are the experts. I mean, this is the definition of a technocratic society, though. It's the experts, the scientific elite experts telling people what is truth and what to think and how to act. But it says, quote, the Biden administration put together a cross-agency task force to tackle disinformation and domestic extremism. And this should be led by something like a reality czar. The job of the reality czar would be to head a centralized task force that could coordinate a single strategic response to COVID-related and election fraud-related conspiracy theories. And it goes on there to say, quote, the task force could also meet regularly with tech platforms. Well, that would be great. The tech platforms that are demonetizing and deplatforming people should meet with the realities are and determine what is real and what should be allowed on the internet, and push for structural changes that could help those companies tackle their own extremism and misinformation problems. And look, I agree that there is definitely a misinformation and disinformation problem out there, and people play a big role in sharing things. You know, I think that we need to put the responsibility back on us instead of like looking to the government or the tech companies. Like, we need to be smarter about what we share and not just sharing things that confirm the things you believe and just because you like the way it sounds, you know, you only read the headline or whatever. We all have a role to play in that, I think, because otherwise this gives the freaking crazies excuses to say, hey, somebody needs to tell us what reality is.
Yeah, they're gonna like, know.
I can't figure it out anymore. And because there's a lot of confusion. And even people who I think are well-meaning, who question government and stuff like that, I see them. I have people reach out to me like, hey, do you know if this is real? And something that in a couple of quick searches, you can find that, hey, look, this doesn't appear to be factual, or at the best, it's speculation based on bits of truth. But there's a lot of confused people who are kind of reaching for things, and some of them end up at a QAnon thing or something else. And then they later like, oh, dang, I started to go down this rabbit hole, and it wasn't really based on truth like I thought. My point is that there are some legitimate problems with like figuring out what is going on in our world right now. And I acknowledge that. But putting a reality czar, like, you know, it just doesn't sound like a positive step.
I'm sure if we just had the right authority, reality would all be kind of squared away. You know what I'm saying?
If someone would just tell us what exactly is going on in the world right then. I mean, and this is, I do want to remind, there is this often quoted CIA quote in the kind of alternative media that from former CIA director William Casey, it's documented in a couple of books and from one of his meetings. He said, "We'll know our disinformation campaign is complete when they can't tell truth from lies." You know, and that's kind of, I always think about that. And this idea that's been floated in the media over the last couple of years about the post-truth era and stuff, and how much it's just like fulfilling this, oh, well, now we can't tell what truth is. We need to regulate what truth is. We need to have realities ours. And it's just,
it sounds like the Dark Ages.
Very convenient. Yeah.
In a way, like, here's what passes for ideas. You know, we get to choose what passes for ideas. Kind of weird. Anyway, I know it's just, I guess sometimes these things are just, I don't know, too much. And maybe the point is, it's just that the critical mass will hit a point where they can't tell how to do a quick search.
I think so. I mean,
and then we'll have a realities are.
I mean, I don't want to get too off point off because we're going here. We're moving, you know, we're talking about the wall. We're talking about realities ours. And now, of course, the focus on domestic extremism. But so what you were just saying there, man, I was with my sister just as I've been visiting, and she was talking about my younger nephew is really getting into World War One right now. And he's like 7 years old. He's obsessed with, he's digging trenches in the backyard and stuff, and like went to the Army surplus store to get replica things or whatever. But she's talking about how he loves history. And he's like, Mom, do you know about these stats and whatever? But the way he's doing it is like he's just asking the phone, what happened in this thing? And then he's like, see, Mom, they say that this is the thing. And I just started thinking kind of my mind, like,
it's
how,
kind of like
how
a journalist only not doing history anymore.
Well, exactly. Like how easy it is for just the AI or probably Google or whatever to be telling. And in a whole generation of people growing up with, that's just where they, yeah, no, the computer said it. Like, Mom, you're crazy. The computer told us this is what the truth is. This is what it is, you know? So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I'm glad my nephew is getting, just as an example, but I'm glad he's getting interested. But I also think it's like, wow, really thinking about the generations that are going to be so trusting on these Googles and the Amazons and the whatever to give them access to everything that's out there. At least that's what they'll believe, you know? And it's just, it's a scary time, including the fact that we have now on mainstream, this is from NPR.
I think it's kind of like the way when you're a child, do you remember? I mean, just being a child and watching TV, you didn't really think about the propaganda that was being propagated that much. I think that's how it is. Like, they're not thinking about it. They're just using it. They're just being entertained, or they're doing their studies, or you know what I mean? It's just integrated in their life so effectively. It's a perfect propaganda tool.
Well, when he gets a little bit older, I'll start posing some questions and planting some seeds. Let's talk about this, though. Look, this is mainstream news. This is like as about as mainstream as you can get. It's on NPR, which means it was played on radio stations all around the country. And this is an 8-minute report on All Things Considered. Former CIA officer says treat domestic extremism as an insurgency. And Robert Grenier, who was CIA station chief for Pakistan and Afghanistan in 2001 after 9/11. He was CIA's Iraq mission manager and then director of CIA Counterterrorism Center from 2004 to 2006. Quote, this is from a New York Times piece he wrote, "We may be witnessing the dawn of a sustained wave of violent insurgency within our own country, perpetuated by our own countrymen." And he says, without national action, quote, "extremists who seek a social apocalypse are capable of producing endemic political violence of a sort not seen in this country since the Reconstruction." And he basically, in this interview, I'm not going to read through all of it. You can find it. It's been getting around there. He calls for treating this, you know, apparent domestic extremist, domestic terror threat that they are pumping up in the same way that they were fighting counterinsurgencies in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, this is literally the war on terror coming to the United States. I mean, I don't know how much more clear. Now, he's a former officer, right? So it's just his opinion, but clearly he's got some experience and probably might have some connections and some insight into what they're planning to do. And he's saying it right here. treat these domestic extremists as an insurgency and use the same old tactics. And what does that mean exactly? I mean, could that mean predator drones flying over the United States? We're just covering this constitutional free zone. And the fact that, you know, I have to cross the border every time I want to come back from Mexico and the US. And I'm always aware that we've covered these stories that the DHS believes and the courts say legally, they can take my computer if they want. They can take my smartphone or whatever I have, and they don't have to give it back to me. And they can maybe send it to me 6 months from now after they've gone through and downloaded all the info. And, you know, so a lot of these scary things are already existing. So as we're seeing this language of domestic extremism, it's not going to play well, guys. And this other one you sent, Micah, from American Military News.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, being from American Military News type thing. You know what
I'm
saying?
This is what I'm saying. It's getting out there. And so this is kind of tying into the last one. DHS issues nationwide terrorism alert over, again, violent extremists who were motivated by election results, COVID lockdowns, and police activity. The DHS issued a nationwide terrorism alert on Wednesday, warning that the public of domestic violent extremists who could incite or conduct violent acts. And in this official terrorism advisory, acting DHS Secretary David Pakosky says that until April 30th, that the DHS is warning of increased threats in the U.S. of, quote, some ideologically motivated violent extremists with objections to the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition, as well as other perceived grievances fueled by false narratives, could continue to mobilize to incite or commit violence. And they specifically mention people who have anger over COVID restrictions, the 2020 election results, and the police use of force. And they label these HVEs, homegrown violent extremists, that have been inspired by foreign terror groups. So,
okay, let's talk about this again for a second, those three things you named. So it sounds like this big warning is going out to them. Watch out for these guys. And so you got these guys that are scared enough that when a window washer tries to wash their windows, they're going to shoot them multiple times. And, you know, these sort of things, some of the times, not all of them, but obviously a percentage. That, I mean, we had three lawsuits just on this show we're talking about, right? So yeah, you're going to tell them that these three things mean it might be an insurgent terrorist.
Exactly.
And what were those things? I mean, there was like, they were so general. One of them was being concerned about the police violence.
Being afraid of police violence, afraid of governmental actions.
Wait a minute. Why should we not be concerned about the one we talked about earlier, Goins? He's like, officers were shot because of his actions, and two people were killed. You know, yeah. I mean, this is some crazy talk. I'm not sure what's going on. Do you think they got the Rona?
They definitely got something crazy, and it is nuts, guys. I mean, I hope that everybody, even we have a wide ranging audience from all over, and there's some people who might be hearing this and say, guys, well, I was terrified by what I saw on the Capitol on the January 6th. And, you know, we do have some crazy people out there who say things I don't like or whatever. And there's people who on the right and left who think this. But, I'm going to reemphasize a point I've made a couple months back when this talk was happening as well, that if we start buying into the state's propaganda and pushing this idea of like, oh, well, the left wing, they're a bunch of domestic extremists. And now the left is happy to call the right wing domestic terrorists or whatever.
Middle
right
wing. And they're ineffectual.
Well, when we start playing this game of like throwing that label at each other, like that's the state's word, the state's propaganda. And if you're willing to say, no, they're extremists.
They're anti-vaxxers.
It's going to get exactly. I mean, they're saying anti-vaxxers are extremists. It's going to get tossed around.
Anti-vaxxers, like the anti-fascists?
I don't know many anti-vaxxers who call themselves. So. I mean, I don't even like using that term. I don't know many people who question vaccines who like refer to them anti-vaxxers. So it's an interesting thing, but I mean, I just want to make
that
point.
That's the point, that the word came from not them.
And the other point here is that, guys, like those who are hearing this, if this sounds to you, if you're like, well, look, this is reasonable measures. These are, you know, there's like people out there maybe encouraging violence, or they won't accept that Trump's gone, or, you know, whatever. Like, I hear you on the concerns with people who are a bit out of touch with reality. But we also have to be seeing what we are kind of setting ourselves up for, what we are approving or endorsing tacitly with our compliance. Let's hit a quick music break, real quick song, come back. We still got one more cop story in NYPD related to GameStop. I want to get into this.
You don't want to comply.
I want to get into some of this Canadian quarantine insanity. If you guys haven't heard,
I don't want to get into Canadian.
I don't want to
quarantine.
Go get quarantined, but I want you guys to hear about this. So we're going to do a quick music break. Let's see what is our shortest, quickest, fast, awesome song.
That one from You Know Who, Be Like Me.
Johnny. Yeah. Okay. Since Johnny's not here with us, shout out to Johnny and him and his family and everything that they're up to. We wish you well and hope to see you soon. This is from Johnny's band, our co-host, Stupid Idiot. It's called Fascist Punk.
Yeah,
it'll be
idiot.
Over in like 30 seconds. We'll be right back. Stay
Fascist
tuned.
Punk.
Freethinker Radio.
Everyone should be like me. Go. Everyone should be like me. Everyone should be like me.
Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. That was our friend Johnny's band, Stupid Idiot, Fascist Punk. And it's about people who try to make everybody else act like them and be like them, especially those people who think like, hey, I'm so counterculture. I'm counterculture. I'm different. But if you're not different like I'm different, then you're not cool, right? Yeah, those kind of people.
You got to fit in. You got to be in the cool.
You got to be like us if you want to be cool. Yeah. But let's continue our conversation. We got one more cop-related story, and it's also related to a big topic of GameStop that some of you have heard about. We don't have on today's show the time to really fully dive into this, but maybe Micah and I can maybe do a separate report on this because it is a pretty big issue. So I'll let you get into this one, Micah.
Well, you know, I was kind of following that GameStop story in general. But I thought this was interesting because, you know, we've had so much news about the domestic terrorists and the storm in the Capitol and the police violence and the riots, you know what I'm saying? That it's just kind of interesting to see the headline from I like this source, Mint Press News. The New York Police Department deploys counterterrorism unit to protect Wall Street in response to the GameStop protests. Charging Bull statue in the financial district has become the site of protests, et cetera. Last week, a handful of activists were seen in Bowling Green Park posing with the bull, holding signs that said, tax Wall Street trades, you know, various things such as that. Hold the line and WSB, both allusions to the GameStop insurrection against hedge funds organized by Reddit's Wall Street Bets community. A similar fate befell the new Fearless Girl statue, which faces the New York Stock Exchange building. Both the bull and the girl are meant to symbolize the power, the bravery, and daring of the city's financial traders. And I don't know what you think about all that stuff, but moving on.
I just want to throw in that real quick, and this is what maybe we can explore at a future date, is like, I definitely have read a couple of different versions of it, and like people saying like, yeah, this is a rebellion against Wall Street, and others who saying there's might be, and not even from a too conspiratorial of a side, but that there might be some other things going on, that a lot of these people might be about to lose money as well, that are like jumping.
Yeah, I've seen some headlines about them losing money. It's an interesting topic. It takes a lot to digest, and I think when we have a good report on it, you know, we'll do a deep dive on it in the future. Reason to check us out, 83 p.m. in Houston, 90.1. Check out the archives on kpft.org. In response, the New York Police Department mobilized its anti-terrorism unit because these kids were out there, these people were out there with their signs by the statues, remember, taking pictures, sending masked Blad. You might have seen some of these guys around town. Blad-clad police officers wearing armor and carrying assault rifles to protect and secure the area. Quote, the stock market has had an interesting week, to say the least. We are happy to report that the Wall Street charging bull is secure and continues to preside over Bowling Green for the foreseeable future, the NYPD announced. And then the bull got covered with a tarp to prevent any further vandalism, you know, tape. The decision to deploy counterterrorism officers on the streets of Manhattan was not well appreciated, turns out, at least judging by replies left on the unit's official social media pages. Perfect example of how police exist to protect private property and not the people is what one person put. And that turned out to be the highest rated response. Other popular responses included, you brought out the automatic rifles and body armor, .. for tape. good ad for defunding the police right here, they said. And if this was a shot in a movie, I think it was too on the nose, like too much to be real. So, you know, it just is like an example of a decision that comes amid a growing movement aimed at punishing wealthy hedge funds who have spent enormous sums betting on the demise of a number of companies, including video game retailers, GameStop, movie theater chain, AMC, and Finnish telecommunications game Nokia, organized primarily on Reddit. Small-scale investors have caused GameStop stock to rise from $35 per share 2 weeks ago to over $300 last Friday. And, you know, their market capital, I read in another, went from $2 billion to $24 billion, the company went.
Yeah.
And if you think of what investment's supposed to be, if people want to gamble on GameStop, because, you know, the fundamentals don't support it, but if they want to gamble on GameStop in a free or a open market, whatever you want to call it, they ought to be able to put their money behind it. And maybe they want these stores to evolve. And maybe with that money, the store can do something they haven't done and hit a new niche market. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I saw that the market had responded in a panic to these independent supposed individuals doing something that the big traders do all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And so it sort of was like a taste of their own medicine. They freaked out. I want to say it's for those who can't see what we're showing on screen. The bull and the girl statue that Mike was talking about that brought out this anti-terror counterterrorism unit, it's literally got like a few small pieces of tape on it, like with some words on it. And that's what brought out a counterterrorism unit. I think that's important to make that
point. I wonder who paid for that, you know, who paid for the terrorism unit to come out that day. I'm sure it took them half a day, right?
At least.
I think we need to get further, but it turns out that the ironically named trading app Robinhood banned the purchase of a number of well-performing stocks, including GameStop, and even forced users to sell their shares against their will. You know how many times we talk about it's not a free market on the show in the last decade? Come on. What kind of free market makes you sell your shares against your will? If it's your stuff, how can anyone make you sell it? Okay, right? So don't get your messages too mixed out there, thinking it's some kind of free market out there. Messaging platform Discord shut down the Wall Street Bets server. So when you think Discord might be kind of like Discord, like something that stands up against Google.
Sure.
They joined in with Google while Google wiped out almost 100,000 negative reviews of Robinhood from its app store, restoring its good rating. Now, who owns stock in all of these companies? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little bit.
I heard that there's a BlackRock tie into some of this as well, so I wouldn't be surprised. But we're going to maybe we can set up a day, Micah, where we just sit down and record another video, another report about just that. Yeah, and we can play that or something next week or something.
We'll have to get further into it.
We could spend half an hour just on that topic.
We've got much time today.
Yeah, about 10 or 12 minutes here on our show for today. Of course, we do this every Friday afternoon and sometimes earlier in the week. It airs Friday, 3 p.m. on 90.1 KPFT Houston. We're happy to be here. And, of course, you can find out more on our website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com, a little bit of our archives and kind of some of our history.
Looking for that first-time donor to KPFT tonight.
Exactly. We're happy for anybody who wants to call in to KPFT or go to kpft.org and find out how you can support and let them know you're doing so in the name of Micah and Derek over at Freethinker Radio. Now, let's get into some other insanity. It kind of ties into everything, right? Because how do you enforce measures like forced quarantines and forced testing and maybe eventually forced vaccinations if you don't have the police, you know, the police that are killing people in their homes, the police that are shooting people with cell phones in their hands and killing them, police that are trampling on people
You won't be sick and you'll know what reality is with a boot on your neck.
The government will tell you what their realities are. Now, look, this is a really disturbing story. And then it's kind of a two-parter. So the Toronto Sun put this story together just one day ago on February 3rd or 2nd. In Warmington, man in forced detention in a Canada COVID hotel. So for those who can't see this on screen, if you're just listening to us, the man is named Steve Joyce.
Did you say a COVID hotel?
Yeah.
So the hotel is where people who had COVID had to go, and if you're there, you can get COVID.
You're forced to go there. So this is interesting. This guy, Steve Dosing is his name, provided the Toronto Sun columnist with pictures of a selfie he took while in forced isolation at a hotel. And he basically said he believes that, you know, that there are essentially COVID-19 internment centers. He says, I'm in one, 34-year-old Scarborough man told the Toronto Sun on Tuesday. I was told when I arrived at the airport on Sunday night from Charlotte that it was either 3 days quarantine or go to jail. So here's the thing is like, hey, you're getting quarantined one way or the other. We're going to take you forcibly by going to jail first, or you're going to voluntarily go. So he was escorted on a shuttle bus from the airport to the nearby hotel. And this is
voluntarily quarantining somewhere else.
This is no normal hotel stay. I don't know if you can see the screen, Micah, but this is like what the walls look like.
It's like they got tape,
all plastic all over the wall. I mean, it looks like
that affect me psychologically.
A hazmat kind of bio sort of thing.
That would traumatize me.
And so this is what he said. He says, I'm not allowed to leave the room. There's a guard at the end of the hall. He must remain in a 9th floor hotel room while waiting for the results of a COVID test he was forced to take.
He can't leave the room. He can't even go out in the yard. Get some calisthenics.
There's a guy outside.
This is worse than prison, right?
He was told, I can't order in food. He's effectively incarcerated. He says, it feels like that. I don't have any say in it.
Can he go out and get sunshine?
No, he's not allowed to leave the room.
No vitamin D.
The worst part, he says, that
before
he left from visiting a friend in North Carolina, he got a COVID test as required by the rules. It cost me $130.
He paid for it.
And I tested negative, so he had to pay for it himself. Then his whole ordeal began when the Public Health Agency of Canada didn't accept his test and ordered him detained until the results of a new test that he also had to pay for were known. He says, quote, I was escorted by police to a shuttle bus and taken to this hotel, which is fenced off from the public. And
that sounds prisony.
And the Toronto Sun says it does have a detention center feel to it. There is a barrier preventing anybody from coming and going, and there's a security detail checks every vehicle entering the property. I mean, it does sound like a prison. They show a picture of the guy on the phone from up in the window, sort of locked in his hotel room.
You don't trust the food they give you. You just don't eat for how long?
Look at this meal, Micah. Here's the meal. We're showing on screen right now. This is literally like, it's a styrofoam thing with like a ham sandwich.
You can wash that lettuce off.
Cheese.
Maybe, huh?
A piece of potato, a piece of lettuce, a piece of tomato,
oh my God,
some slab of turkey, and like a little ketchup packet or mustard packet.
That's
tomato,
right?
That is like worse than a prison meal right there.
Yeah, I think all I can maybe eat is that lettuce.
So,
and that would be afraid of what was on it.
So they bring him
like an experiment in this thing. Show that hallway.
They bring him up a water and a sandwich, you know, once a day or twice a day or whatever it is. And this is the hallway that he's in. And so then I had a follow-up story. This is from, I thought this was interesting, a travel website in Canada actually wrote about this. Travel Pulse Canada says, quarantine of traveling Canadians raises human rights concerns. And they just basically commenting about the Toronto Sun story and just saying, hey, like, this is a little bit disturbing and how it's kind of crazy. And it says, Travel Pulse Canada checked out the Government of Canada website that deals with quarantine issues. We found that the rules weren't exactly clear, and we were unable to find a section of the regulations that says what happens to someone who gets on board a Canada-bound plane with the wrong kind of test. We then contacted the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and they said, quote, various orders and rules that are in place are difficult to navigate and, of course, are made harder by the fact that they are in a state of flux. They said, however, they believe that the federal order and council that is in effect is likely speaks to the issue he is facing. And they're basically just kind of calling out the concerns here. I have two friends, man, that I met that were in Mexico for a little while. And when this was announced, they decided, you know what, we're going to go home before these tests get enforced. And now they're kind of like the words they said to me is like, I feel like I'm going to choose your prison kind of thing. Like, they basically can't legally cross into the US across the border or fly. They won't let Canadians come to Mexico either. And they can't fly anywhere, even out of the country. And if they fly back from anywhere, then they got to do forced quarantine. And it's at these kind of crazy hotels. I mean, I don't – and rest assured, Americans –
I saw a little side story on that one you were showing. It said something about Biden supporting quarantines for people that are coming here. I was just like,
no. Yeah. I mean, that now all – as of January 26th, so for example, when I was just in Mexico last week, people who flew to our event in Mexico – in order for them to fly back to the U.S., they were forced to take a PCR test starting next Wednesday. So if you're coming back to the U.S. from anywhere in the world now, not just select countries, you either have to take this test or they're going to forcibly quarantine you. And that's what I was going to say. Americans need to realize this is happening out here as well. We covered months ago, they have these CDC quarantine centers already. It might be a hotel or an auditorium or something. But the point is, there's a guard. You can't leave. You can't have any visitors. You can't, you know, like, you're a prisoner, basically. And whether that's 3 days, a week, or 2 weeks, it's just sad that we're seeing that people are willing to accept it. I mean, I think if I was in Canada
maybe
and that was going on,
parent out there with such a super weak immune system that this is what's happening.
People need to go do this, like, protest at those places is my thing. Like, if that starts happening in the U.S. or in Mexico or wherever you're at, I think that that's like, you need to protest it. Like, let people know that it's happening, and like, hey, there's a guy being held in here, a prisoner. Does anybody care? And, you know, some people don't care.
You know, they talk
some
about people
aren't going to care.
Can't afford, you know, your average person can't afford, you know, X expense, unplanned expense, or whatever. Do you think your average person can afford however many days down they have to spend in one of these locks?
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, in the Canadian thing, Justin Trudeau, who's the, you know, Prime Minister of Canada, said, like, they're saying that, like, they're going to – you have to go into these quarantine centers and that you have to pay for it. And they're saying in some cases that it could cost up to $2,000. So you have to pay $2,000 to be forcibly tested and forcibly quarantined. I mean,
that's
just
–
it's insane, man. It's insane. I want to mention one more that's in this COVID thing, and I know you got a couple economic stories we can get to before we wrap up. But this one is just another story that, hey, Freethinker Radio has been telling you about for about a year now that was coming and is now – we've already seen the airlines adopting it, but Denmark now becoming the first nation to officially launch a coronavirus passport to prove vaccination. This is, again, another idea coming from the World Economic Forum and their push for a great reset. Denmark,
prove that vaccination, but not identification, right?
This one, I think, is just specifically about like getting your COVID passport, you know. But yeah. So it says Denmark will be issuing coronavirus passports for individuals who have received the COVID vaccine. It'll be issued by the end of the month. Denmark's acting finance minister said on Wednesday there will also be a digital form of the passport, but it will not be available for another 2 or 3 months. More details could be added to the digital passport, including whether a person has tested positive. So more details. This is the beginning, you know, of digital all-encompassing ID. Denmark's government will make these passports while consulting with cultural and business organizations. And they basically said it's absolutely crucial for us to restart Danish society. So in order to do that, they're saying these passports are kind of like the best hope. The government hopes these passports will help return Denmark to pre-coronavirus days, allowing business people to travel outside the country, sporting events to host fans, and concerts to take place. So, but it's basically saying like you got to have to prove your vaccination status if you want to be a part of that going back to normal life. Coronavirus vaccine is sparking new hope, officials say, but they're, you know, they're, and this is the thing is the country has only had, according to this, if you even trust these numbers, 200,000 cases and over 2,000 deaths. So that's a whole country with just over 2,000 deaths, and they're implementing a vaccination passport to prove if you can travel and go to sports events and whatever else. Like, I mean, and again, this is coming to the U.S. It's coming to most major places in the world. They've already been talking about it with the various airports adopting them and supporting them as well. The Rockefeller Institute, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Gates Foundation and others are supporting the common pass from the World Economic Forum, and it's right around the horizon. Anyways, Michael, which ones do you want to get into? I know we got a few.
We're going to hit them fast if you don't mind. Let's hit that first. Another 779,000 Americans
got it
filed for unemployment last week. Yeah, we've been seeing these numbers for how long now? Huge numbers. They say it's down slightly from last week's 812,000. I know we spend about 20 minutes on a past Freethinker radio looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, going meticulous detail in the reports to show how they have changed the numbers before. So I don't know that I even trust any of their numbers. You know what I'm saying at this point? But yeah, they say right now there's 17.8 million Americans that are receiving some form of government unemployment benefit. You know, and meanwhile, you got the $1.9 trillion stimulus package, you know, being discussed and all that stuff, where the money's going, et cetera. So, you know, that's just a giant overview. You talked earlier when we were talking about events, supporting events that were close to the heart, home, hearth, spirit, whatever you want to say, you know, since the bigs are getting bigger. Yeah, and more people are getting unemployed. If you go to the next one, don't be fooled. The official unemployment numbers are a lie. I know a little bit ago I was talking about us walking through the BLS. It's funny they're called the BLS, right? statistics and showing how they had basically changed the numbers. But this one gets into it a little bit deeper. There's also sites like Shadow Stats that get into all the economic numbers with, and they explain how they get them. Basically, in some ways, the way they used to be traditionally got, such as inflation, but unemployment as well.
What is it? Shadowstats.com or what?
Yes. The official unemployment rate they say now stands at 6.7%. But they, like, look at that. We've been seeing how many people? And behind that cheery 6.7% stand millions of uncounted people. And they say uncounted by design. What might be called underemployed would be most accurate. There's just so many different ways of people that aren't being counted. So this 6.7, and I know we don't have time to get into all of it, but underemployment is one. So a lot of people also file in, they write back and say, since you're a freelancer, you only made this much, you do not qualify. All kinds of ways of different type of employment, like bartenders, freelancers, etc., that have been like severely hit by the pandemic, right? But they're not getting, you know, their unemployment, so they don't even fit the numbers. And, of course, after you've been on it so long, you fall off of the numbers. And then there's a whole set of people who were never paid into it, so they never claim it, see? So, yeah. Just in January 2021 alone, there were 965,000 first-time unemployment claims. So I just wanted to kind of remind people about that and, you know, remind them there are markets all over the place and ways to engage other than just Amazon and, you know, eBay and such, places in your community, and maybe some good stuff. I don't know. We'd like to talk about stuff. If you buy something cool, tell us. Anyway, I had this other one. I don't know if you saw it, but did you see McKinsey settled for nearly $600 million over their role in the opioid crisis? I thought that was interesting because they weren't a drug dealer, but rather a consulting firm that reached agreements with 49 states because of its sales advice to drug makers, including Purdue Pharma, the manufacturer of OxyContin. So it gets in there and talks about they reached this settlement agreement. So you think about it, if they're going to agree to a settlement, they probably were afraid of getting hit by a lot more. Nevada was left out, so they're going to pursue their own opioid investigation. And by the way, you didn't think there was a crisis. The United States, it's contributed to the deaths of more than 450,000 people over the past two decades. So
definitely too many people have been affected by that opioid crisis. So, you know, it's I don't know if getting them to pay billions of dollars can fix it, but definitely that's a good idea. It's a good thing that more and more people are noticing it.
I don't know about you, but don't drug dealers, when they have to pay a penalty, just sell more drugs?
Yeah, I don't think it really stops anything. We got to get out of here for now, though, guys. We appreciate everybody who's been listening. Of course, our website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com. This is Freethinker Radio. We're here every week. You can find us at kpft.org. You can support KPFT if you want to keep us on air. And if you're listening and you have friends in Houston who don't know about our show, please spread the word to them. And until next time, guys, we'll talk to you soon. Peace. If you happen to follow and want a song talking about popping the bottles, watchers and models, I'm not gonna bother. Got us a problem, can't stop it tomorrow. Everybody put your hands up if you happen to follow and want a song talking about popping the bottles, watchers and models, I'm not gonna bother. Got us a problem, can't stop it tomorrow. Hello, my name is The Truth. Honest, solely throwing a grenade in the booth. See me delete these beats out. I'm a white rapper like I TP'd your house. Put your hands up if you happen to follow and want a song talking about popping the bottles, watches and models, I'm not gonna bother. Got us a problem, can't stop it tomorrow. Change, change to market Obama. Change you can believe will offer you nada. The same global elite are dropping them dollars. Republic of the puppet, the heart of the monster. Uganda and Gaza are products of anonymous economists and politicians calling the shots. Would you last if it happened tomorrow? Running down your block from an all-black chopper. Zoom, zoom like you hopped in a Mazda. Top chopped off, spotlight shined on ya. Drive faster, they're starting to catch up. Get a megaphone, start yelling your ass off. This ain't Germany, if you came to murder me, I'm going to the top, so you better aim vertically. Okay, certainly, this ain't brain surgery. Just change the teleprompter like I'm Ron Burgundy. Put your hands up if you happen to follow. If want a song talking about popping the bottles, watches and models, I'm not gonna bother. Got us a problem, can't stop it tomorrow. Eric, put your hands up if you happen to follow. And want a song talking about popping the bottles, watches and models, I'm not gonna bother. Got us a problem, can't stop it tomorrow.
That's what I call fear-mongering.
Pessimism, repetition.
Communism, terrorism.
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 Historical reminiscence, because this is repetitious. It's the new world order in the 60th edition. The mission isn't different if it's Hitler to the Clintons or the politicians sitting in trilateral commissions. The president's position has never been our decision. It's been given with permission in a one-party system. You think there's competition in between the opposition, but from Bush to Obama, there really isn't a difference. They wish to kill victims of the police state system, so I spit out bars to free us from the prison.
I can sound pop to bait you in, then spit real talk like a bait and switch. Take those kids who never gave two shits and make them give one just based on this. Listen, new Rockefeller, old ambitions. They're all terrorists by their own definitions. Give a little kid a missile in the Middle East. Tell them it's a competition to see who can live the least. They own television, that's why they don't mention the fact that Tower 7 was controlled demolition. Those in suspicion must be code for magicians, cause those sons of bitches were at home in their kitchens. Funding the mission of the opposition, giving them guns and getting shot by our own ammunition. Turn off your television, because they won't mention the fact that Tower 7 was controlled demolition.
You can call me crazy, but go look it up on 9/11 Tower.
or seven fell without getting touched. Touch, touch. Jay Solo.
9/11 was done by people, our own government, our own banking system, to perpetuate the fear of the American people into subordinating themselves to anything the government wants them to do. That's what it's about, and to create this war, this endless war on terror.